Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hey everyone, this is Dawn Westmoreland of the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Today, I have somebody very exciting that's going to be on the show. He's done labor and employment law, litigation, corporate and business law attorney, 25 years. He has so much experience that I'm not even going to begin to start telling you everything, but I'm going to have him talk about it. So welcome, Stuart Silverman. We're so glad to have you on the show.
Dawn, thank you, and good morning or good day to everybody, just depending what time you're listening. You're excited about having me, Dawn. I'm excited about being here on this wonderful show. I've listened to shows in the past, and it's just truly a treat to be here today with you.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. And we know some of the same people. It's a small world, and it's exciting that you're in Florida, South Florida, because that's where I grew up, and I know you're having wonderful weather this time.
Relatively speaking, yeah. I mean, compared to everybody else today, we're having wonderful weather, though. I got to be honest with you. I don't see blue skies today, so people should not feel that bad that they're not here today.
Okay. Well, that makes us all feel better for those of us that look out the window and see snow. But let's get into about you. 25 years in law. You cover a lot of things. So one thing I know is you practice law in Florida, and you also get into federal cases. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. What I do is I do labor and employment law, and it's both sides of the fence, both plaintiffs and defendants work, which really gives me an opportunity to, quite frankly, deal with what I like to do, which is really help people with the problems they have. It could be a small to mid-sized company that like wakes up one day and they've been doing a couple million in business and says, good gosh, we really don't know what we're doing in the employment realm. We're worrying about things. What can we do to help those get things set up? Or they've run into a problem already where somebody's attacked them. Or it could be an individual who's separating from a company after a period of time, or who's got an EEOC case against the company, or things of that nature. Anything within the employment law realm, those are the type of things I generally take on.
Great. So if you're an employee out there or an employer, Stuart might be able to help you if you're having problems. And oftentimes, employees, without even going to their chain of command supervision, are filing Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, will erase the commission, that's the place, but they add EEO claims, and they don't even work and discuss it with the management. And sometimes they're having FMLA claims, which is Family Medical Leave Act or American Disability Act. You know, how do you get involved with that, Stuart?
Well, what happens is, from an employee point of view, what I usually like to do is get involved early, and here's why. In fact, you know, the EEOC comes out with their yearly statistics and this round a little bit before this time of year, usually end of January, beginning of February. And usually from the last few years, we can predict them. And if you've seen them in the past years, the ones this year pretty much show the same, that about half, 48.8% of the cases that the EEOC gets from their last year, fiscal year, which begins in September or so, 48.8% involve claims of retaliation. So it's not that necessarily the person saying, I was harassed because of my race, because of disability, because of sex, because of age, or national origin. It's a matter of once I made the complaint, the employer had did something, or once I opposed a practice or wanted to do something, the employer now did something. And from a plaintiff's perspective, that is a much, much easier case to prove than a what sometimes develops into a he said, she said about the main discrimination case. So what I like to do is get involved before it gets there, before it becomes that case, because then I can sit down with the with the employee, and quite frankly, Dawn, we can do is you can set the company up for retaliation claim. And that's a much easier thing. And hopefully what also happens there is the case does not need to take its 3, 4, 5 years and the stress and toll that it does. And hopefully the employer can come to its senses early or even before filing, and everybody can be happy campers and get on their way and get on with their life.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I know, because I have a background in human resources, 27 years, I know what you just said, Stuart, is retaliation seems to be easier to prove, especially if there's good documentation. So let's talk about documentation, because I'm sure all the time you get calls from some frantic employee and it's a he said, she said. What would you tell them so they could have something to prove to you that they are being either discriminated or retaliated?
Well, the number one rule, and you really hit it, is really documentation. And quite frankly, it works on sides of the fence, the employee and the employer side. On the employee side, you really want to document what is causing it. And there was great advice that I actually heard from you, Dawn, in one of the previous podcasts, is that you want to make sure you do it in an email, and not just your work email. CC it to your home emails or something else. Why? Because if the employee were to be terminated and they lose access to now to their work email, they'll still have a record of this as well. But that being said, there's a little trick with regards to the documentation. So if there's a problem, you want to be able to have it documented, but there's something else too, is that if it develops into something further, you have to have in mind that there's going to be another set of eyes looking at these emails. It might be a higher supervisor, it might be HR, it might be a judge or jury, might be a defense counsel. And therefore, it's important that the tone of those emails is the tone that you want to give off. So if you wrote it because you're really angry, check it first. Don't send it like that. To include the word please in there does wonders. I've got a case now I just went through a few weeks ago for the EEOC, and one of the things the responses was, look at the tone of the supervisor's responses by email and the timing of them. And what do you mean they didn't have any hatred towards my person? Just look at the tone of the emails. It's apparent that it's there. And so something that we really have to keep in mind as well, that sometimes our target audience is not necessarily our target audience. You think you're writing to the supervisor, really the target audience is going to be that person's supervisor, HR, a judge or jury later on. So it's important to have that, not only document everything, but to put it in a way that's going to get results and it's going to be useful down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And that wants me to lead into talking about social media. All the time I see people out there complaining about their boss, their peers on social media. What's your advice around that?
Oh my gosh. Let's see, what day is it and what year are we in, and here's why. Number one, it's a very interesting thing. It's a whole topic to itself, because the the National Labor Relations Board, the entity that's involved in protecting the National Labor Relations Act, which is an act that gives employees of companies of certain size the right to, we think of it, to form unions, but also gives them the right to complain about their wages and workplace things and things of that nature. They took a view for a period of time that, you know, these guys are getting fired because they're complaining about their salary on social media, or they're saying nasty things about their boss, and they may have a right under this particular act that protects them. And now recent decisions are going against that. But it's one thing to complain about the boss on social media. The problem is, from my perspective, as the guy who comes in after the fact or sometimes during the fact, that's not a good approach. Because if you've got the right to be able to make the complaint to the boss, make the complaint to the boss. You're not going to score points with the boss, with the company, by complaining about them on social media. It feels good to the person making the complaint, but in the eye of the receiving end, they're not going to be so crazy about that. That's one. Two, it's possible. We're all human. We don't say things the same way that we do to the company as we do on social media. And therefore, if you're making complaint A with the company and complaint, let's call it not A, not exactly the same thing somewhere else, it's going to come back to you. Because a good defense attorney will say, well, you told us one thing, but you didn't complain about that in social media. You complained about something else. So which one is it? Or is it neither?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very important, because you never know who can access your social media, because it's public. And even though you may put settings on it, you know, people can get through. They definitely can. So do you go into companies and help them, to maybe a startup company or a company that's already started with policies and how to have compliance? You go in and talk about that?
Absolutely. And I do it from a different approach. What I do is I sit down with a company, and I spend a lot of time really just learning about the company, what makes them tick, because every company is different. Because again, it's made up really of individuals. The Ma and Pa had this great idea to do something. They're doing it for themselves because they've got a way that they want to do it that's different. Let's say they've been working for somebody else or another company down the road in the same city who might be doing the same set of services. And they're also going to have a unique set of things that is their particular interest. I want to learn what it is that makes company A, for lack of a better term, tick, what's important to them, and then we can write those policies and give guidance based upon what's important to them. Let me give you an example. This is one I had not that long ago. I was working with a company, and part of what they do was involved in some party planning things, and there were some concerns about particular workers with alcohol. And so we fully addressed that because, you know, it was unique to their particular, you know, particular business, what they could and couldn't do. And that wasn't even the serving aspect. It was just because there was alcohol around. So mm-hmm. We try to figure out what's important to that company, what they see as a problem, and how can we can address it. And Dawn, as you know from spending so many years in HR, that HR's got a lot of power, mm-hmm. sometimes not tapped into. You know, I've said plenty of times, and I've joked about it, that the person who came up with the idea calling it the employee handbook really should be shot. It's just a terrible name. If we would view it as how the employer can get out of lawsuit, how the employer can minimize the risk of something going wrong, then we can get creative there, mm-hmm. and put those things in there that the company needs to do to protect itself from problems before they occur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not just talking about employees, we're talking about employers. And, you know, about last year, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has sent out a task force. And they, for 18 months, did a lot of studies, and they found out that online training is not working when it comes to discrimination, sexual harassment, as such. It's like what you're doing, Stuart. You're going into the company, you're finding out what their mission is about, you know, the dynamics of the organization. Have you ever had anybody come to you and say, I don't think you're important, I don't need you, I would just want to do the online training?
No, and the online training, and it's true of so many things in life. You know, if I want to learn something, I got to invest into it. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking in terms of dollars. I'm talking about my actual self. As the expression, the more skin in the game I have, the more interest I'm going to have. And so online training, it's very nice. These guys do wonderful jobs, but from the receiving end, yeah, I can be surfing the web. I can be doing other things at the same time. But now that you're sitting down with somebody or you're thinking about the problems yourself, which is really what's going on. The people in the company are thinking about these things, forcing them to think about them and deal with them. Now they're more involved. Now they're going to get more out of it. As an aside, the EOC has done a lot of really nice things over the last few years. It's given us more guidance on policies. It finally came out with some retaliation language after, I think, like 18 years of like not having anything. Mm-hmm. And it did a whole lot of stuff with some other policies as well. And what they've really gone to over the last, I think, three to four years, is having a lot of policies with examples in them. It's one thing to have a policy. It's even worse if the policy doesn't get used. In fact, it goes against the company when they don't enforce the policy. But then if you have a policy that's out there and somewhat used but not fully understood, it's also an issue. And the EEOC sort of came up with ways to, you know, put the policy out there and then like give examples of it so people can understand it much easier. And you know what? It really, really makes it much better, at least for me, when I'm discussing with the client about things. They've really got a much better grasp mm-hmm. on things now. It's one thing to hear the words and they register, but when you like hear an example and now it clicks, it's even better. Now they can just run with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one other thing, what it does, it doesn't help the company. It helps every worker in there too. Everybody knows that now, for example, the company has a anti-retaliation policy. So everybody knows that that's going to be the case. And that if somebody takes action against it, they're supposed to report it, and it makes for a much smoother workplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like how you said skin in the game. I use that often myself. Skin in the game means that somebody has a vested interest in it. So if somebody came to you and they wanted to hire you as an attorney for legal whatever, for them to have some skin in the game with you, you would probably want documentation and such like that. What would make you consider doing a contingency versus working hourly for that person?
Right. And sometimes it's a hybrid and things of that nature. It depends, you know, at least like Florida, we've got a whole set of rules on contingency and things of that nature. And we have, Florida's big on this thing. They have what we call literally it's called like a Bill of Rights, because it's 10, and that's actually 11 or so rights a person have with regards to contingency fee agreements. But generally, I discuss it with the individual. And it depends on the nature of the case, the size of the case, what's involved, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if it's going to be, you know, they haven't gone to the EEO or EEOC level yet, and it's a matter of, I understand what their goal is. Let's say, I don't want it to get there. I just want to make sure that I can keep my job, or if I can't keep my job, then I really don't want to sue them. I just want to retire. I want to get what I can now, things of that nature. We'll then come up with some other options there. And by the way, there's no one thing. It doesn't have to be contingency. It doesn't have to be hourly. It could be a fixed rate. It could be a hybrid, like a blend of both or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of different options that, you know, I'm happy to discuss with individuals based upon, you know, the type of case, and usually, quite frankly, what it is what I think makes sense for them. There have been times where I said, listen, you'd much rather do this on a contingency, and the person says, no, I don't want to worry about a percentage at the end. I just give me a fixed number, what you think it's going to be, and so I know what that is, and I'll worry about it afterwards. Okay, so, you know, again, it's a process. With both, you know, between myself and the potential, and then hopefully actual client.
Yeah, it's good to know you have so many choices. So would you give our listeners some examples of how people are discriminated, employees discriminated in the workplace?
Oh, one of the beauties of employment law is just when you think you've seen everything, something else happens and you know, you see a new thing. So again, the law basically protects the persons discriminated, at least under Title VII, based upon race, disability, sex, age, national origin, some other things as well, religion. They don't come up as much. Again, they do come up, but it's it's much rarer. But those are the basic ones under Title VII. Again, it's going to be something that I'll do the age one. That seems to be the somewhat, see, a fair amount of, for whatever reason, this is South Florida,
mm-hmm.
Where a person who is, let's say, has been working there, fine, basically gets terminated. There has to be something that affects the change of pay, not just they didn't like me, they said bad things, something that affects the pay based upon the discriminatory thing, and you're going to have to say that but for the discrimination, that wouldn't have happened. That's what's the basic case. The employer then comes in and says, that might be true, but we didn't get rid of you because of age. We got rid of you because you weren't doing your job, because of some other reason, because of your behavior, because of something else. And then it's the employee's burden to show that reason the company gave is pretext, is garbage. Mm-hmm. No, that's not true because of whatever. And there are fun things to do with that. Really, you thought I was doing a terrible job? Here are my annual reviews for the last 10 years. They're all fantastic. Look at these comments. You know, best person we've had here. Better than sliced bread. Yeah. What do you mean I was doing a terrible job? Or the company failed to follow its own documents for doing so. All of a sudden now, this person gets put on a plan for improvement, a performance improvement plan, but the company has a whole system as how it's supposed to do it, and it never followed it. Or somebody with similar behavior didn't get the same thing, or what have you. So all these little things. So the company told one story and then told something else. Social media, again, the same boss who said, I got rid of him for X, told everybody on his social media, got rid of him for some other reason. Again, that's a rare one, but theoretically, you know, that one could occur as well. So a lot of different fun things that basically go on throughout the work life of a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I liked how you talked about the personal improvement plan, which is probably mostly in the federal government. In the last, I guess it's almost been 4 years, I have helped people from an HR perspective with EEO cases, and they've all had severe retaliation. And you gave a very good example, Stuart, because I, with my background, so many years in HR, I mean, I know HR stuff inside and out. And so I start reading all these performance plans, you know, here's what you're supposed to do. And the next thing I see is a supervisor manager rating that person outside of that, the job duties they were assigned, which is illegal. And then that's retaliation. And that happens a lot. I see that happen so much about every time I've ever worked with somebody in the federal government. But one thing I do know that you do, and I'm so excited about this, is that you work with whistleblower claims. Tell me about that.
I will, but let me go back to your
sure.
PIP one because it ties into something earlier. And that's where the documentation from the employee is so important. And here's why. Because as you know, the performance improvement plan, generally one of the things, one of the catch-alls that a lot of times companies put in there is, and we need to go over the following things and meet on a weekly basis, every 2 weeks or whatever.
Yep.
So if the employee handles it in the proper fashion, like may not agree with it, probably definitely doesn't agree with it, but writes those nice emails that says, I'm looking for guidance on points A, B, or whatever in there. And on the flip side, the company's not having any meetings, not following it whatsoever, or anything of that nature, that is going to be very helpful mm-hmm. in any claim for discrimination. You sent this as a jury could say, you really sent this as a CYA thing. You really didn't want to put the person on a performance improvement plan, but they made some complaint about something. You now retaliated against them and you couldn't even follow that. And look at their emails to you, how nice they are. Look at what they documented and what did you send back? And you know what? We laugh, but we also know it happens.
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. Because when somebody in the federal government is put on a performance improvement plan, and let's say they're being put on it illegally, they really are doing a good job, they've been a good employee, but it's retaliation. Well, you know, depending on which federal agency it is, I know all the time they're changing their handbooks and stuff like that, or their directives. And sometimes there's just a certain time period, and that person, the employee, has to meet those standards, even though they've put them on different standards that they shouldn't be doing. And the next thing they know is legally, the company, well, they're doing it illegally, but they're going to say, oh, this person's a bad person. They can't do the job. And the next thing they know is, they're out of the federal government. And maybe that person is a couple years from retiring. They need the medical benefits for themselves or their wife or their children or their partner. It can be really, really ugly. And I've seen it happen where, you know, people are fired illegally. And that's where, you know, I come in and I help, and then I turn it over to an attorney because I do believe in employment attorneys. And I believe that people pay attention to attorneys. I mean, I know I've worked on a really tough retaliation case, one of the worst I've seen. And even though I've documented it from the beginning to the end, you know, I'm handing it over to an attorney, employment attorney, that I met before you, Stuart, but now I know that you're doing, I'm going to be sending work your way. And the person is really upset because of all the horrible retaliation. And whistleblowers, they get beat up very badly. I know because I was a whistleblower myself, and I know everything that happens, all the sneaky things that happen. So it's so important for these people to get good documentation, but also for an attorney to be involved because then there's more people involved. And if these people are getting retaliated against, it can put a stop to the retaliation or also put people on notice. What do you think?
You're absolutely right in those points. Having worked with employers before, and sometimes they see tons of cases, it's what I call they can't separate the tree from the forest, because sometimes it might be an individual sending something in, you go, okay, big deal, big deal, big deal, and the attorney sends it in. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm either judging the same way, but most of the time they wake up and go, oh my gosh, there's an attorney here. I'm viewing it differently. Okay, now we've got to look at it a little bit differently. But also, what it does for the individual is it gets the stress out of the issue as well. Listen, it's going through it is about as stressful as anything that there is. Going through it alone is even more stress because there's a whole system and you got to do this at this time or whatever. Once there's the attorney involved, that again changes the whole dynamic because again the one of the things I guess we're programmed to do is sort of take the stress out of it from the or eliminate the stress that the individual is going to have. It's still going to be going through it. It's still going to be stressful just because there are plenty of days where things are happening, plenty of days where things aren't going to happen. It takes time. From a whistleblower perspective, it takes a certain breed of person to stand up and say, what you guys are doing is wrong, and this is right, and here's why. Because it was so simple, everybody would do it, but not everybody does it. It takes a tremendous, tremendous effort to do so, as Dawn, as you know. And there might be days where people get up and say, why did I need this headache for them? 2 years into this, they got rid of me. I could have been quiet and kept my job. And I got car payments coming, or the holidays are coming, or birthdays are coming, and where am I going to get extra funds from? And you start second guessing. But at the same time, what I've also seen is the reward, not, I'm not talking just financial, I'm talking about the satisfaction that you did something right. The person stood up and fought and had the courage of their conviction and did what they believed was right and was right as well. Once upon a time, I used to do employment things in a and for public agencies. For example, it was both, again, both sides, but a person, let's say, was had a First Amendment claim where they had a freedom of speech thing. That person had one where a police officer was fired because he wrote something that or exercised expression, a First Amendment right, or what have you. And the case went on like forever. And ever and ever. Eventually, we won, and the satisfaction the person had, again, not in, just in terms of monetary, but this person had the guts to stand up for what was right, and a jury of his peers found that he was right. How much more so was a newspaper did an editorial saying, okay, this guy did what was right, and this police era period under a particular person is over and done with, and again, costing this particular place more money and things of that nature. But the satisfaction that you have for standing up and doing what's right, and that we're in a country where the laws out there that give the person the right to be able to do this as well, mm-hmm. is tremendously satisfying. It's as if the person is standing up in court, wrapping the flag around him or her, you know, and okay. saying, I'm fighting for what's right.
Yeah. I have to agree. And I'll share quickly because, you know, you and I've talked about my past. I became a whistleblower about 5 years ago in the federal government because I noticed that there were only five black employees out of 550. And that disturbed me because right away I knew something was going on, and I caught on real quickly that it was nepotism, hiring a family and friends, which is illegal in the federal government, but not necessarily in the private sector. So I spoke up, and as soon as I spoke up, yeah, I've never met a federal whistleblower that hasn't been harmed. And I don't mean necessarily physically, you know, bad things happen to them. You know, I lost a very nice home. I was removed. My paycheck was illegally cut off. And I did get a quick hearing date, and I was able to document it myself because of my background in HR. And 2 days before the hearing date, after going back and forth, I said I refused to sign a gag order. And because I knew it was my calling, I knew I'd went through it. I didn't like what I went through. I mean, I lost a lot of things, but I also lost my old self, and it became very liberating, very, very empowering. And then word got out about what I did. So the last years, yes, I have worked with employees. Now I'm out there doing podcasting, also celebrating people who are doing it right in the workplace, leaders that are doing it right. So I like working on both sides like you do too. What kind of seminars are you doing? Because I know you do seminars down there in South Florida. Are you traveling around the nation, Stuart, or staying in Florida?
So combination of both. There's one group I do a webinar with pretty much monthly, sometimes every 2 months. And it's like on basic employment law stuff or what have you. Mm-hmm. There's another group I'm associated with, Workplace Violence Prevention Institute. It's a group of a couple of years old. We've actually had a series where we've been up to New Jersey a couple of times a year. Doing things. I actually spoke nationally at the BLR Workplace Violence Prevention Seminar, actually meeting, last year. We also went up to, we were invited out to our good friends in Northeast Pennsylvania, probably clobbered with like 16 inches of snow today. But they invited us out there in April or so of last year, so we did a nice presentation out there as well. And we're trying to get on the schedule for some other things nationally as well. We had a couple of things planned, just didn't materialize to some other parts of the country as well. But it's like, you know, have airplanes, so to speak, we'll travel. You know, I've pretty much gone a bunch of places to do. I actually once upon a time did a series of national webinars. Actually, the ones I do monthly are national, but I actually did like a series for one of these continuing legal education things where I actually did something on a national basis, which was interesting because mm-hmm. every so often you get the person who calls, has a question and says, well, here in Iowa, Nebraska, you know, can you tell me? And I'm going, no, I can't. I have no idea. I've proposed to some of the things in your state law, but I can tell you things from a federal perspective, again, because it's a federal law. You know, all throughout the country, I got an idea what some areas do, you know, based upon others, just because we just have ideas about that things and what have you. But I tend to get out there to give seminars, webinars. It was always fun, because, and I'll tell you why, for a lot of reasons. One, I learned so much. I learned so much. And then I can come back and help my clients with even more. Two, what I generally find is the person who goes isn't like waking up one day and say, hey, this would be a good idea to go. There's a real problem that they have, or there's a real problem that they anticipate having. And you're able to, in the course of that webinar, seminar with them, deal with that particular problem and give a little advice on it, or think it through and come back a few days later with a little advice on it. So now they've left with more knowledge and they've got the problem solved. And from my perspective, I've left with more knowledge because I know how to deal with this particular problem.
Yeah, I totally get that, totally understand. We always learn from our clients. So if somebody was listening in and they wanted to find out how to be on your webinar or any events, how would they find out?
So number one is the best way is always to email me because, and I'll give you that in a moment, because one of the things that I do is I have a newsletter. So I always list what's coming up and things of that nature that people can, you know, can connect into. So that's usually the easiest and the most non-personal way, I should say, than actually like picking up the phone, giving a call, which is always invited too. But you know, it's quick and easy just to find out something because I do always put out newsletters, and the newsletters always have a list of what's coming up and how to get in touch with that. Or again, sometimes I say, listen, there's a real issue. Just give me a call. You don't have to go to the webinar. If I know what it is, I'll figure it out, and we can take it from there.
That's wonderful.
You know, why should I have to wait? Why should I have to wait 3 or 4 weeks for the answer? They can get it now and get on with life, so to speak.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Are you marketing or sharing your advice on any kind of social media?
So I'm on LinkedIn, and like anybody else on LinkedIn, I go through. Like the moon, wax and wane. Sometimes I'm posting tons of stuff with a lot of it, and sometimes I get, you know, bogged down with a lot of other work, so I don't get as much time as I would like to post. So if you look up my profile on LinkedIn, there's a fair amount that I have there on workplace violence, on things with regards to terminating employees. And so one of the things I have on LinkedIn is something that I call the 10 commandments of termination, separation, 5 positive, 5 negative. So it's things, for example, don't terminate somebody on a Friday or before a holiday where they get a whole weekend to be able to brood about and go, I can't believe they got rid of me. I need to do something about it. And they get all this angst in them. Don't do it by email in personal ways, or not to have strangers in there. Again, you don't want to embarrass the person while this is going on. It's embarrassing enough. Or don't walk them out in front of the whole office for everybody to see. And what are the people's reactions? They don't want to see it. They're like trying to look away. They don't want to make eye contact because it's so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And then there are positive things we can do as well. Like, for example, you get to that meeting, have all the dollars and cents figured out. So you can say, you're going to get insurance, you're going to get benefits, you're going to get this, whatever non-monetary things, they should also be there. But this is part of a bigger discussion, which is companies unfortunately fire quickly without thinking it through, without thinking, gee, this person had a claim for discrimination. We fire him. It's not going to be a retaliation claim. You need to play these out. Or if the person violated the company rules, were they aware of the rule? Were other people treated the same way? Things of that nature. These are just some of the things I have out there on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's good information to know, because I know I get contacted all the time on bullying. So let's talk about bullying. So if somebody's being bullied in the workplace, we both know that bullying is not illegal in the workplace. However, discrimination is. So do you want to talk about bullying and discrimination, the difference?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So in terms of OSHA, which deals with workplace violence and like 22 other federal things as well, which has a lot of very, very, very nifty stuff in it. But at any rate, it says that everybody has to have a safe workplace. Now, bullying per se is not discrimination. There's a catch. As more bullying is going on and some states are starting to take action, they're starting to get through their legislatures different bills that sort of put bullying and harassment together. So therefore, there could start to be some sort of, on at least level, a push for that. Now, that's not going to help federal EEOC claims. But of course, many states have state equivalent statutes, and that'll now bolster those particular claims. But it's going to take a little while to work its way down the road. But bullying basically is going to be an act taken upon somebody. And Dawn, to give you an idea, this is a scary number. The OSHA estimates, and that's the key word, estimates, that there are 2 million incidents of workplace violence a year in the U.S. Now, an incident of workplace violence could be an assault, could be a threat, could be a push, could be a shove, could be a shooting, could be a stabbing. Anything in there is considered, but it's an OSHA estimate. Now, here's the catch with the estimate. First, the estimate is scary, because that means if there's, let's say, 50 work weeks a year, 2 million a year, that means there's 40,000 incidents a week. But this is an estimate because it's also known that the nursing industry has a historically low reporting rate to OSHA, just because nurses don't want to report things because they don't want to be retaliated against. And there's studies out there that show how drastically low. Mm-hmm. So if you talk to anybody who's sort of worked these numbers a little bit, they'll sort of tell you that that 2 million number could be 4.5, 5 million
wow.
incidents a year. Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
That's a real
it is scary.
Scary number. And the interesting thing is this is where HR has that ability to, amongst the many things they do, to sort of be the first line in defense in preventing this. Or this is where small to mid-sized companies, in coming up with their, quote, employee handbooks, have the ability to create the culture to prevent this. And mm-hmm. OSHA, by the way, is a good source of this. They talk about They talk about in some of their documentation ways that company can do this and get rid of retaliation claims. Again, 48.8% mm-hmm. of the EEOC things, they can do this at the same time by just really changing the culture that goes on in a workplace. And it's doable. And this is where companies mm-hmm. can get creative. This is where I can help companies, and you know, they can don't have reduce the risk of workplace violence, reduce the risk of retaliation claims, and really get a lot of productivity and make working places, you know, much happier mm-hmm. than it can be.
Yeah, and it can happen. It really can happen. It comes down from the leadership. The leadership, whatever they agree to, if they, you know, ignore the bullying or discrimination, and then other people feel that they're not in a safe environment. But one of the things that I know, because I've worked, you know, 22 years in the federal government in HR and the last 5 years private, but one thing that I do know, HR is required to go out and teach supervisors how to document up cases and stuff like that. When I say cases, I'm talking about, you know, disciplinary problems, stuff like that. What I've seen, Stuart, is a lot of times a company or a federal agency cannot get rid of a person because the supervisor did not write up proper documentation. And so that person who, yes, he, she has sexually harassed somebody, discriminated, retaliated, whatever, but the documentation wasn't done properly, and then you can't get rid of the person. Speak to that, please.
Yeah, so it goes to a bigger picture, which is when we make somebody a supervisor, are we giving them all the tools they need to be a supervisor? A lot of times we've got the person a supervisor because they've been there for a long period of time. They're able to do the job as good or as better than anybody else, so we make them supervisor. What that does is it takes away productivity from the job going on, because you now just took your most productive person and made that person supervisor. We got to give them the tools to know the people skills in order to properly interview people, to properly train people, to properly lead people. And part of that is the documentation process. Now, here's the sad thing, Dawn, as you know, in some places, this documentation gets looked at as like babysitting. It's taking away from my work. I really want to be mm-hmm. making widgets and moving them down the conveyor belt or something of that nature. I don't have time to go out and document. But no, part of the job of supervisor is to recognize there's this leadership aspect. And part of that is to try to ensure good working, good environment, safe environment for everybody there. And mm-hmm. when the supervisor has to realize that if they're not doing the documentation, that's part of the job. And it one is. Of the things mm-hmm. that, again, no, you need to give them the skills for it. We need to show them that that's an essential portion of the KSAs are the knowledge, skills, and abilities that's part of this job. But that all goes back to the point that you actually start out with, and is actually the correct point, which is it all comes from the top. If the top, if the people in leadership make the decision to have the proper environment, it's going to get there. Mm-hmm. If they stress that these are things that supervisors are going to do, it's going to get there.
I absolutely believe that. This has been a very interesting, very educational experience talking to you, Stuart. If anybody listening in wants to get a hold of you or hire you, tell me some of your contact information, and we will also have it on the website too.
Okay, so there's three easy ways. Now, fortunately, I get plenty of referrals, which is really good. So therefore, I sort of, you know, I'm sort of old school in that sense. So you're not going to go to a website and find stuff. I'll give you the three easiest ways. One is you can go to my LinkedIn profile. Again, just look up LinkedIn, Stuart, S-T-U-A-R-T, mm-hmm. last name Silverman, S-I-L-V-E-R-M-A-N. You'll find me, hopefully, and find the information. And that's always one way. Two is email. I can give you the email address. It's very, very technical. And I'm probably one of the last, 90 people on the planet still using AOL, but I'll probably get a response and they'll drive it up to like 180 or something like that. So at any rate, here we go. It's smslawfirm@aol.com. S as in Sam, M as in Mary, S as in Sam, lawfirm@aol.com. Or if you really have time in your day, which is always great, people can actually pick up the phone, give me a call, call me directly. I'm happy to give you that number, Dawn.
Wow.
It's down here in pouring, miserable weather now, South Florida. So your listeners throughout the country can feel really good when they're getting snow. We're getting tons of rain here, which we really need, quite frankly. The number is 561-289, and then the four corners of your screen, 9319. You know, almost the four corners of your keypad. 561-289-9319. Three easiest ways to get in touch with me. Smoke signals, I don't read them all that well, especially in the rain. Courier pigeons, you don't have to worry about. Just the phone, email, that always gets me.
Well, I have to tell you, you cracked me up about the AOL, because I actually have one AOL account I use when I sign up for things and I don't want tons of email.
So I have one for that too, but I used to say this line that I had 27. I had a case recently in federal court and I decided, well, there's a lot of attorneys in here. Let me look at everybody's email thing. And it's like, my goodness, these must be like the only people in South Florida still have AOL or all in this one case. I mean, it was like 19 out of like 30 attorneys had AOL accounts. It was hilarious.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is funny. This has been so enjoyable. And even I learned something new, and it's an honor to have you on my show. It really is. So for the listeners, again, Stuart Silverman handles EEOC cases. He handles federal cases, and he also practices law in Florida, and that's the whole state of Florida. So, Stuart, thank you so much. Do you have any parting words before we sign off?
I really don't. It's been, firstly, thank me so much. Thank you so much for having me. Thank your listeners for spending time with us today. And hopefully, again, hopefully learning things or thinking about things that, you know, create those ideas to learn about. But Dawn, it's the point that, just one little point, is something you mentioned earlier, was we all have that ability in ourselves. Sometimes it takes a little lawsuit, it takes some experience of a whistleblower to realize that we've got that ability in ourselves to make the positive change in the workplace. And you know, it's, you know, depending how you look at it, that's what we're all trying to do here, is making the workplace really a better place for the listener, for the company they're at, for everybody around them. And that's really what we try to do, and we use the law to be able to do that on a daily basis.
Well said, well said. Thank you again, Stuart, and to all the listeners. Hey, stay empowered and come back and join us again. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination.
Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Dawmarie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.